Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And welcome to the SmackDown Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of SmackDown. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review SmackDown, but also Monday Night Raw, NXT 2.0, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Sidgwick to review Friday night SmackDown. And what do you make of this show, Sidge?
It's a bit rubbish, to be honest. You know what's great about it, though, in the capacity of a reviewer, there's so little wrestling that you don't really have to talk about it that much. You don't have to pay attention to it that much. Did someone, I don't know if someone did the maths or if this was just like a joke, but what, like 18 minutes of wrestling? It can't be that little. Maybe that was just a joke, but it certainly felt like it. It just feels like this show never has a great deal of wrestling on it. It does have an absolute abundance of pretty dire comedy, which in this case was at the very least elevated somewhat by the performer delivering it. There are storylines that are terrible imitations of stuff we've seen 22 years ago that have been ongoing since August and are still happening with no development. Roman Reigns continues to be just head and shoulders above literally everybody else. It's just a pretty bad pro wrestling TV show. One of these days, I'm going to drop the ultimate tweet on there, and just in the best way to do it right is on a Saturday morning, because the worst, I tend not to care about them so much anymore, but the absolute worst mutants, right? They always, if you notice, you could tweet, you could call Vince McMahon worse than absolute shit on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And you'd probably get a bit of blowback. But honestly, if you want to get cool tweeted into oblivion, right? Criticize WWE on a weekend. Criticize WWE on a weekend, because these people with no lives tell on themselves that they have no lives and will quote tweet you into oblivion on a weekend. The ultimate tweet is something, if I haven't got the correct wording yet, but the mega fans can get a sneak glimpse. Mm-hmm. Monday Night Raw is the worst, most poorly written, contrived television show in history. And it's still better than SmackDown, because those are my feelings on the matter.
Yes, I was talking to you before we started recording about how I... So did a silly little tweet about the little 30-second video tonight on SmackDown that they always put out on WWE.com to lead into the show, about how there is a brief shot featuring Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns doing the shield fist, but with no Dean Ambrose in sight. Just a little joke about them, not suggesting that they did this, because obviously there was a lot of Dean Ambrose in the show, and on that exact promo, just a little joke that they were pretending that it was only ever Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns in the Shield. Tweeted that. Nice little bit of banter for everyone on Friday night. Woke up on Saturday morning, and apparently the Vince Cells had found the tweet and thought I was talking after the show, which featured Dean Ambrose wall-to-wall in all these Shield videos, because of course it did. You can't really cut him out no matter how hard you try. And yeah, no one cared about that. And they, I got called a bony little virgin. So that was nice.
But the show there's a rule, what's the rule of the internet? That is a part of what's the, there's a, so there's certain rules of the internet. The biggest one, in my opinion, is that if you're saying that other people are virgins and you are a big sex stud, mm-hmm. you're more likely than not the virgin in this scenario, mm-hmm. right? Just putting it out there. I don't think someone who defends the Fed religiously to the point where they like to hate follow certain, like they hate monitor certain accounts they don't follow mm-hmm. just to defend the Fed. Like, I don't think you're having wild sex. Yeah. I don't think you're having like full intercourse on the regular. There's something about your Twitter activity, your social media activity, the fact that I don't even know what the fuck you look like. But you know, I might have something to do with it. You're probably f-ing obese. Not there's anything wrong with that, but you know what I mean? I was sick of them. Absolutely sick of them. Anyway, sorry, Will, but I've made your job a little bit more difficult.
That's all right. You're always living in my head rent-free anyway, so it's
no. No, shut up, man.
Right, let's talk about this show, because like you said, it was a bit all over the bloody place. The show opens, video package highlighting Rollins and Reigns that was teased throughout the show with some great sort of historical memories from the stuff that happened with the two of them. I'll mention them as we go past them. And then we get the Usos coming out to cut a promo. They talk about beating the New Day definitively last week to retain those SmackDown tag team titles, but talked about how they respect the New Day because they're the only team to really push them to the limit. Jimmy claims the Usos are the greatest tag team of all time. Jay just keeps saying yeet all the time for some reason. They said they showed their hand. They said they are going to come out and help potentially Roman Reigns when he comes face to face with Rollins later. But before that, there is a fatal four-way match to determine the number one contenders on SmackDown. And Jimmy did some funny little introductions for each of the teams. God, the state of this bloody SmackDown tag team division. Jesus Christ. We had Jinder Mahal and Shanky, the Viking Raiders, Los Lotharios, and that infamous best friend team with such a storied history, Cesaro and Mansoor.
I mean, let's go down the run. It's don't even have like four tag teams.
I was looking at this right as they came out, and I was like, well, it's definitely not going to be Jinder Mahal and Shanky, right? I was thinking, could be Los Lotharios, but that dynamic would be weird. Cesaro, Mansoor. Yeah, I suppose they could do something. And I was like, also, it's probably going to be the Viking Raiders, despite the fact that they lost in about 3 minutes last week on SmackDown to Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin. And that's what happened. I did like the bit with the Usos staying in the ring for all the four teams coming in, doing the usual instructions before they head out to do commentary. And then just out of nowhere, super kicking Ivar and Mansoor and being like, off you go, lads. Big brawl breaks out, takes us to commercial. When we come back, it's Jinder Mahal and Shanky teaming up on Eric, beating him down. He eventually gets out of there, gets to Ivar, who comes in and knocks both members of Los Lotharios and Mansoor and Cesaro off the apron as he's making his offense. Shanky goes for a splash in the corner, but he gets out of the way, and Eric does that thing where he picks up Ivar and just chucks him into Shanky. Ivar goes up top. Mahal cuts him off. They're fighting on the top rope. Cesaro jumps in, tries to help Mahal hit a double superplex. And instead, Eric jumps in and does a sort of double power bomb to Cesaro and Mahal, neglecting to mention the fact that Ivar probably took the worst of it.
Yeah.
Regardless, Mansoor is subsequently beaten down and isolated. Gets out of there, gets to Cesaro, gets the hot tag, runs wild and reminds us how bloody brilliant he is. Samoan drop to Umberto, goes to give Ivar the giant swing, gets it going, but Umberto gets in to break it up, and Mahal hits the Kalas on Umberto Carrillo. The Los Lotharios then hit Mahal with a double super kick, double suicide dive to the outside onto Mahal and Shanky. Ivar sets up to do something similar, but Los Lotharios catch him with a double super kick. But the Viking Raiders fight back, hit the Viking experience on Umberto. 1, 2, 3. They are the number one contenders, and there's a bit of back and forth between them and the Usos standing on the announce table as this section ended.
Yes, it's just an odd experience because it's the same dissonance you get from watching almost every other WWE match, in that you're watching good to very good action. In phases, some of this match wasn't particularly good, but you know, they know how to just, these are like the trained professional wrestlers, some of which, Cesaro's, your Viking Raiders, like Los Lotharios have had more experience as well. Their bread and butter is working multi-man tags and doing their spots, instructing them in a way that's going to pass for a good match. Mm-hmm. They can do this kind of thing in their sleep. There's various tricks they can do, like double teams and counters in a genre like this, to get a pop and to work a quote-unquote good match. But I just had no emotional investment in it whatsoever. Because as you said, Wilborn, I'm looking at this roll call of teams and I'm thinking, like, I know for a fact this promotion doesn't care about tag team wrestling, but there have been fleeting occasions in recent years when they do enough to make you forget, and this wasn't that.
No.
Like the Viking Raiders, as you pointed out, got beat by a comedy heel act within 3 minutes last week, and now I'm expected to take them seriously as tag team title contenders this. Like, even if they're not going to win the titles off the Usos, at least... don't have the audacity to make me think that's absolutely not going to happen. Like, they lost a week ago in 3 minutes, and now they're winning against every other team, not except the ones that they got beat off. There's no division. There's no emotional investment. There's no continuity. This is soup-brained, booked by a madman stuff. Yeah. Who can't even articulate his thoughts anymore, much less actually possess them.
I think it speaks volumes that as I was watching this and thinking, right, well, they've definitively put away the New Day for the time being. These are your next four options, effectively. And all I could think was, God, they need a draft to bring in some more tag teams to SmackDown. And I thought, they've just had one. They had one a month or two ago. Jesus. But yes, like you say, the Viking Raiders aren't taking the tag
titles. You don't need drafts, much less one every month.
The Viking Raiders aren't taking the tag titles off the Usos, so it is what it is. But it's something to keep them busy, I suppose, for the Royal Rumble. So there we have it. Nothing against Eric and Ivor. They're incredibly talented, and they should, you know, they've been former tag team champions. They should have so much more status, let's say, within WWE. But you can't do what you did. Like, even if you just didn't do what you did last week, I'd buy them as way more of a threat, even though I know they're not taking the titles off the Usos. Like, you couldn't have just had, maybe have Eric or Ivar get beaten in singles action against Corbin and say, oh, well, that's because...
You don't beat them at all.
Well, exactly.
There's no need to beat them at all.
Beat any of the teams we've talked about here, but still, no. Viking Raiders are the
number one. Wilborn has actually thought about it enough in advance where you think, oh, the Viking Raiders are probably the best team we've got. They're a good interim challenger, if you like, for the Usos, before they'll probably just do a ladder match with the New Day, because they've not really done that, I don't think. And that's a decent-sized tag team attraction for Mania. So what they should have done was, right, okay, well, if we're going to do New Day versus Usos ladder match, we've already just about done it, so we need something in the interim. The Viking Raiders are the best, most established team. Right, who are the other teams we've got? They can beat the other teams on a three-week spree across 3 weeks of episodic TV. Hopefully they'll get over. Hopefully they'll come across as a legitimate threat, because we're actually thinking, just I'm only asking them to do it for 3 weeks because there's three teams. 3 weeks of a push. Win, win, win. Oh, we've won a lot. We should get a tag team title opportunity in what should be a very good match. They can't book, man. They're useless.
We go backstage following a video of Sonya Deville interfering in Naomi's match with Charlotte Flair. Naomi storms into Deville's office, furious that once again she's interfered in her business last week. She wants to know why Deville's got a problem with her. And Deville basically says she doesn't like Naomi's attitude. And she says, look, I know you want to fight me, but when this jacket is on, I'm your boss. You can't touch me. Remember that for later. And she says, Naomi needs to get out of her office before Deville takes it even further and maybe kicks her out of the Royal Rumble match. And Naomi walks off. Adam Pearce comes in and goes, oh, is it cold in here? And they pump the thermostat up. This was a story-long arc, Michael Sidgwick.
There are people, right, out there who are insistent that AEW do something more like this to build towards the main event, sort of retain viewers throughout the night that aren't necessarily interested in certain individual matches, hence why the rating line goes a little bit like a peak in a trough. They should do things like this. I'm not saying they can't do a good version of it, but this is what usually it is. It's funny, if you're going to do an emulation of a sporting league, fixtures is usually the way to do it. If you want to do absolute bollocks sports entertainment, it is to have one of your baby faces, right? Take an incredibly, like, metaphorical, like, statement, seriously and literally, and attempt to actually remove the clothing from her.
When this jacket's on,
like, it's not as if the jacket itself imbues her with the powers of being an executive. It's not as if it's written into her contract, or you can only conduct your responsibilities as an executive, matchmaker, talent liaison, whatever the title is. Oh, but if you're not wearing that specific jacket, mm-hmm. right? If you're not wearing that specific jacket, you don't have the job anymore, and people are free to assault you or whatever. All right, okay. Here's a hypothetical scenario for you, Wilborn, okay? What if Sonya Deville, right, is doing the most stellar job imaginable as the SmackDown matchmaker?
Mm-hmm.
She, in fact, creates so many fantastic matches that within 2 years, a new boom is created, right? A new boom is created. The ratings are absolutely through the roof to a level where you thought, God, they're still streaming services because these ratings look like pre-Netflix. They're so great, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if that specific jacket she's wearing starts to, like, fray a little bit at the collar, right? And she decides to replace the jacket. And a baby face goes, ah, she's not wearing the jacket anymore. Right, I can fight her now. Like, oh, you know, sorry. If you don't wear that jacket, it wasn't your contract. It doesn't matter how well you've done to get these ratings, Sonya, you're fired because you're no longer wearing the jacket that you are contractually obligated to wear. Otherwise, you can't perform your duties.
I mean, we were one step away on this show from Naomi walking in with a fake beard on and going, excuse me, Mr. Ville, can I take that jacket to be dry cleaned for you? Wait a second, who's under that beard?
Everyone's a moron. I hate it. The storyline, God damn, it's not even that. They've done worse. They've done worse than this. But my God, how could anyone possibly care? Everyone involved is an idiot. Imagine taking things literally like this. Is she a child? She's 6 years old.
It did tickle me this. We'll come back to it later. We got a video package highlighting Rollins and Reigns in the Shield, which did feature Dean Ambrose. So, well, there's people on Twitter sure showed me for a tweet I sent before the show. Anyway, and then we got Sami Zayn debuting a new segment. He comes out, talks about the conspiracy against him, talks about Johnny Knoxville, airs a video package in case we'd forgotten what happened last week. He says he's happy, though, that Knoxville's in the Rumble because he's entering the Rumble as well. But he was upset that Knoxville thinks that he can just walk in and be a wrestler. But Sami Zayn can just easily do what Knoxville does even better. Everyone knows he's a bigger jackass than Johnny Knoxville. And so he introduces his new stunt show, In Zayn. Very nice. He comes out, he's in a shopping cart, and there's a little ramp, and he's apparently planning to jump the ring. There's a crash mat on the other side of it where the commentators are. I suppose he'd have more success than Sin Cara's entrance, but still. He gets pushed out by two blokes and faffs about for ages. I'm going to do it. Oh, no, wait a second. Just not sure. Oh, I'm going to do it. Oh, no, wait a second. I'm not sure about this. Or is this the trolley as big as when we used it in rehearsals? Blah, blah, blah. Sets up to do it. Gets runs down, well, he gets pushed down the entrance ramp, but stops just before and decides, you know what, bollocks, I'm not doing it. Gets in the ring, ranting and raving, when who should jump up on the apron then? Rick Boogs! That distracts Sami Zayn. Shinsuke Nakamura comes in behind Sami Zayn. He can't see him. Turns around into a Kinshasa. And Rick Boogs picks up Zayn and press slams him out of the ring onto the crash pad.
I'm conflicted here, Wilborn. I'm very conflicted. If you put Corbin, right? I'm not saying Corbin's a terrible performer. I don't like his ring work necessarily. I don't like this current gimmick, but he's proven to me that he's got something about him, right? But Corbin in this guise, right, is Happy Corbin. Imagine they're doing the Johnny Knoxville stuff, but with Corbin and Moss instead of Zayn. Because I hate this gimmick that they're in, this happy madcap stuff, right? You take Sami Zayn out of this segment, right? And it's woeful.
Yeah.
It is so bad. It is so removed from professional wrestling. You have two baby faces ganging up on a heel at the end of it. If you did want to think of it within the parameters of something that's happening on a wrestling show and the established psychology of a professional wrestling show, and what drives conflicts and how you get behind people, you've still got two heel baby faces ganging up on a heel at the end of it anyway. So that sucks. Even as the loosest possible version of wrestling, it still sucks. But it wasn't that. It was, how do you make Jackass not funny? Like, Jackass, it doesn't matter how much. It doesn't matter the extent to which you would like to think of oneself an intellectual. Like me, for example, who can be a pedantic little twat when I want. It doesn't matter how pretentious you want to be. Doesn't matter how refined your tastes are. There's a universal appeal to something like Jackass.
Yeah.
Like just watching people get like fall over or get violently hurt or whatever. It appeals to our most base, cruel human instincts. Put Jackass in the context of WWE and they make it not funny. They are so bad at everything. Like the worst thing is I went on a wrestling show. It's like, yeah, you suck at everything else. The idea of, oh, got you. I've just gently landed you onto a crash mat. That Sami Zayn then has to sell. It's like, wouldn't it be a funnier visual gag if you'd simply missed the crash pad, which is meant to cushion your blow and go, oops, sorry. Like, wouldn't that be a gag? Like, oh God, it's so bad. And yet, because Sami Zayn, and he's like, he's a pretty funny guy.
Yeah.
The sense of panic, he managed to like reach the old octaves to get the sense of panic just before he was about to go on the ramp. Like legitimately pop me, but I know he could be doing so much more. If he's done his legacy years, his creative years, and God damn it, he's earned the glittering reputation he still has to this day. And he's just doing this because he's feeling a little bit broken down and he's getting paid handsomely to do it. So be it. But even when I pop for Sami Zayn, it's still bittersweet because I know he could be doing so much else.
Like to take credit for this as well, akin to our booking on the SmackDown preview. We suggested that Knoxville prank him in the build to the Royal Rumble. And WWE thought, now we can do one better. We'll do his own stunt show where there aren't any stunts. Then we got, before actually Aaliyah's singles in-ring debut, we got an interview with her. She said, embarrassing myself in my first singles match on SmackDown. I'm facing Natalya, you know, legend. And Natalya's doing this new gimmick where she's just talking about all her achievements. She says, look, there's no shame in losing to me. I've got 3 records in the Guinness Book of World Records, which Aaliyah no-sells by saying she didn't even realize it still existed. Natalya did not like this. Natalya was talking about all the things she's achieved, most matches, most wins, whatever it is, and promised as she headed out that she was going to beat the Guinness World Record of 3.8 seconds for the fastest women's match, which I suppose technically she did achieve, but she was on the wrong end of it. You see, before the match, Natalya jumps Aaliyah, beats her down, viciously lays her out, so much so that the referee waves off the match saying Aaliyah can't compete, to which Aaliyah pops up and goes, no, fine. And the announcer has to say, oh, change of plan, she can compete now. Bell rings. Aaliyah immediately rolls up Natalya and gets the 1-2-3 in 3.17 seconds, which was subsequently announced as a new world record.
Right. You know when people say that WWE is like an awful, evil organization? Even like on these tiny little levels, yes, that is very, very, very much true. Like when you go, say you went to the first day of school, right? The first day of secondary school in particular, when kids are starting to realize that there's a competitive element to the social order. And if you win, you can become popular, or at the very least, you avoid being bullied. You are protected. You are dominant. You're not weak or anything like that. So kids, by the time they transition into their early teen years, decide to become little bastards, basically, because they know that if they are considered like weak or whatever, they'll get the piss taken out of them. Their lives won't be living. So you get some kid has the unfortunate the misfortune to have something happen to them or to do something accidentally on like the first day of school.
Yeah.
And it's going to persist with them all the way through. And say, for example, that they fall over in class, right? Or whatever. That's going to haunt them for the rest of their days in school. They can become adults where they never repeat this story. They could go to university in a different city or college in a different town, and they could get a brand new social circle, and like it'll be fine because they're all grown ups. And in fact, they might let slip or like telling embarrassing stories or what happened to you at school as I fell over. And they wouldn't be called oh, fall boy, fall out boy, fall down boy, or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they're grown ups, right? WWE is run by one of the most grown ups, 76 year old Vince McMahon. Mm-hmm. He still has this mentality. Poor Aaliyah had the goddamn temerity to feel a little bit nervous on her nationally televised debut on Fox. I mean, mm-hmm. She was probably on USA, but this is a much bigger deal. And she's going to be the girl who's almost sick now. Mm-hmm. She's going to be the girl who's almost sick, who retches, who can't believe that she's a winner, and she's wretched, and she's going to have to be made to like relive that embarrassment because WWE is year eight. WWE is year eight, and it's absolutely awful. There's a guy, though, right? I know. Ignore everything I just said because this one's funny.
Yeah.
It was absolutely class when you're in year nine and you're in year 10 and you're a lad and your hormones are absolutely all over the place, shall we say. Mm-hmm. One time in geography, right? I'm not going to say the guy's name. But in geography, this guy was asked, can you stand up, please, and repeat what you've just said? And he was like, no. And the teacher was getting very, very irritated because this guy was usually quite mild-mannered. And it was like, it's the cruelty of it. Like the one time he gets caught talking, like the teacher, he must have been having a bad day, decides to kick the cat and call this kid out, even though he was like generally like really well-behaved, harmless. I told you to stand up. Could you stand up? He's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And like, I think the teacher instantly went, oh, he's got a stiffy. I'm not going to push it. I'm not going to press this issue. Oh, I feel bad. And then one of the kids, oh, I'm going to say, his name wasn't Dave. But Dave's got a stiffy. That's why he won't stand up. But we're 15, and that's what you do when you're 15. You try and get an opportunity for a pop. You get the laugh. And then that's it. No one remembers these things 36-year-olds later. I never remember that. It just popped in my head.
Yeah.
But Vince McMahon, I can have a private joke with me, you, and a couple of tens of thousand listeners.
Yeah.
But not doing it in front of millions of people, right? There's a difference. Yeah. There's a difference.
I will say this. In my first year of university, on one of the first days in the halls, a lad said, I need to, because I don't know how to call the right people because... I've dropped my keys down the toilet and he became Pooey Joe for the entire time of university.
That's not funny. You see, I'm trying to make a salient point about compassion. Wilborn, don't tell us that anecdote.
No. You know what I will say about this as well. You all know I'm not exactly the biggest fan of Natalia, but I thought, fair play to her when she was doing this on social media and saying like, her assistants writing tweets for her and about how successful and, like you say, the most influential of the performers. You know, she may not have titles around her waist now, but look at all the things that she's done within the company. And I thought, I'm not, you know, hugely into this, but, you know, there's legs for a sort of mini feud on this where, you know, she goes around and, you know, teaches a few youngsters a lesson and then someone gets over. Maybe it was going to be Aaliyah. Well, finally defeating her. And it's so WWE to be like, yeah, what about that? But all condensed down into like a 5-minute segment. Cool. So we're not going to let this one play out. It's just straight away. Yeah. Oh, I'm amazing. I'm a record breaker. Psych, rolled up in 3 seconds. See you later. Doesn't do anything for anyone, but.
Doesn't do anything for anyone, this. Natalya, like, it's the wrong kind of record. I'm the longest serving. That means you've been around forever and people are sick of it.
Like, and they're gonna be like, hey, Aaliyah, record breaker. What? So her special power is roll-up. Is that what we're...
That girl who's going to be sick all the time. She broke a record. That's crazy. You should cheer for that girl who's going to be sick all the time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, we go backstage because Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce mightily impressed by the performance of Aaliyah. But tell you what, Sige, it is boiling in their office. Maybe we'll follow that up a little bit. Later on in the show, funny the listeners can see your face now. Anyway, let's.
I'm not
move
being
on.
Funny, right? I'm not being funny, and I've grown out of the AEW versus WWE comparisons, right? Because WWE said over the weekend they're not the same things, and that's very much true, just not the way they intended. I'm not joking when I say, right, there is something unfathomably stupid on every single episode of WWE television. Just something only the most demented mind could conjure. Every week, every show, that never gets touched upon enough.
I just love them.
You know what? I might create a thread on Twitter as proof of this theory. There is something unfathomably stupid on WWE TV on every single episode of WWE television. I'm going to document it.
Do it. I'd read that on a weekly basis without question. Right, then it was the time for the return of Lita. Michael Cole introduces her. She got a huge reaction from the fans, lots of chants, lots of signs, all that sort of thing. And Michael Cole chats to her about influencing, you know, Bailey and all the women basically on the current roster and asked why Lita decided to enter herself into the Women's Royal Rumble this year. And she said, look, you know, I've done a lot of things in my career. I've gone into the Hall of Fame. I've main evented Monday Night Raw. But I was never in a Royal Rumble match back in the day. And I thought, yeah, but you were in the one in 2018. This isn't your first Rumble. But they just went, oh, yeah, no one will remember that. But I did like the fact she said she feels she's got one more run left in her. She's going to win the Rumble, main event WrestleMania, and go out on a high, effectively. And the fans love this when SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair's music, of course, hits. She wanders out to the ring, takes the mic from Cole, tells him to piss off. She'll take over the interview. She mocks Lita. She says, "I'm going to enter the Royal Rumble as champion. I'm going to win. And then I'm going to chuck you out whilst I'm winning. And then I'm going to choose my opponent at WrestleMania. And you're going to be stuck with a loss and probably not going to be able to deal with it properly." Lita comes back calling Flair. Tonya Harding takes the mickey out of her giant head. There's even a giant head chance. And Flair, furious at this, reminds Lita that she beat and retired Trish Stratus at SummerSlam. Lita fakes a slap to Flair. Flair covers up. And then when she peeks back out again, Lita hits her with the twist of fate to close the show.
Oh, I wish it was a close the show. We've got more left.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Close the segment.
Oh, you've got my heart, my hopes up, man. Thank you. The crowd at times responded warmly to Lita. I like that Lita is getting reintroduced as sort of the legendary trailblazer women's wrestling figure within the context of WWE. I know that Manami Toyota exists, okay? Mm-hmm. I know that Manami Toyota exists, so I'm not going to regurgitate this dribble of, oh, how important it was that Trish and Lita debuted, like, they main event an episode of Raw in 2004, right? Joshi was, like, dead by 2004 because that trailer already blazed. It already burnt out. So I'm not one of those nerds, but at the same time, Lita had a horrendous run of it during those years when they're retrospectively like touted now as these trailblazing years and very progressive and influential. She got called a whore by masses of fans in every single arena for doing exactly that which Edge did together. Exactly, yeah. With the interlocking pair of genitals, in fact. And Edge was a legend, heel, great heel. Lita was the slut, and it always pissed me off. It pisses me off to this day whenever you rewatch it. So I really think it's nice that Lita can have this chapter of her run wherein she's just someone who was actually pretty damn good at wrestling and a huge crowd connection, like really underrated crowd connection, and can go out without any kind of that residual stink on her. However, I didn't really like this at all. I thought the giant head patter was woeful.
Yep.
I thought it was beneath the gravity of a big intergenerational clash like this. They should be talking about their respective legacies. Cherry picking, of course, mm-hmm. their respective legacies, putting them against each other. Kind of basic stuff that doesn't involve terrible patter and schoolyard insults. And I tell you one thing I did like about this segment, not for the correct reasons, mind you. I laughed out loud at Charlotte's bump. What an absolutely terrible bump. Just commit. She looked like she was doing the worm. It's like you're bumping for your upcoming opponent's finisher. Just take the goddamn bump. It don't look like you're doing the worm and making me laugh in the process.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like this segment, like you say, for all the reasons listed there. But I did look at it and think, yeah, I'd be all right with this being a WrestleMania match. I'm not suggesting necessarily Lita needs to win the Women's Royal Rumble to get it. I'd still think, you know, maybe a Bianca Belair or a Rhea Ripley would be more deserving of that sort of thing. But crap patter aside, like you said, great reaction for Lita, an intriguing matchup, history, like you say, with Charlotte and Lita and, you know, past and present and, you know, the legacy of that WrestleMania as well, of course. Yeah, really excited about the potential this has, but yeah, no more giant head patter for me. And I just didn't
need it. It got a chant. We're in for it now.
I was genuinely shocked that it got such an instantaneous chant as well. Like, normally they have to be like, come on, everyone, giant head, giant.
I know, but they are a bunch of seals, aren't they? A lot of them. Not all of them, but the ones who listen to this aren't. But, you know, some of them are. Some of them are.
I really enjoyed, actually, what came next. Before it, we got a recap of the 12 Days of Christmas street fight and then Ricochet breaking Rich Holland's nose at day one. And then Sheamus, before he walks out, points out, well, what's wrong with this picture? I've not got my protege, Rich Holland, with me, but doesn't matter because I'm going to go out there and break Ricochet's nose for him. I'm going to get some revenge tonight. And then we got Ricochet versus Sheamus. Ricochet in a little inset promo, said, look, you know, I do extraordinary things and I'm going to break Sheamus's nose as well tonight, quite possibly. But unsurprisingly, in the old Sidgwick regular quote book, two people who've been given god-awful storylines over the past 2 years, two people who, if you just leave them to it and just go, right, lads, go out there, 10 minutes, Sheamus, you're going over, can produce magic. Sheamus and Ricochet work great together here because it's horrible bastard, hard-hitting Sheamus versus incredibly talented, agile, athletic, gravity-defying Ricochet. There's your match. Simple. Give him their time. Let him do stuff like this. Ricochet sends Sheamus out to the floor, dives onto him. But Sheamus trips Ricochet on the apron to regain control and then gets him with his head and neck underneath the ring and does that sort of slingshot into the horrible metal underneath. Always think that looks like it absolutely sucks no matter what you do to try and protect yourself. Ricochet fights back after the break. Springboard crossbody off the second rope. Sheamus misses a bro kick, ends up on the apron, and then Ricochet hangs him up on the second rope and hits a lion salt to his back for a nice two count. Ricochet goes for the 450. Sheamus gets out of the way, but Ricochet lands on his feet, but then runs straight into a beautiful tilt-a-whirl backbreaker from Sheamus. He goes for white noise off the top rope. Ricochet breaks out of it, goes out to the apron, flips back and hits a sunset flip flower bomb? Sunset flip power bomb for a nice near fall. And then as they are battling back and forth between the two of them, Ricochet goes for that handspring knee thing off the ropes and just flips around straight into a beautiful bro kick for the Sheamus victory. I really enjoyed this, like I said.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. If you like turn your brain off and just enjoy 10 minutes of an exhibition, which essentially is what this was. Yes, very, very good. There's no real emotional investment in it. If you're emotionally invested in Ricochet, you're a moron. But in terms of the action, like, this is really well worked. They've had probably their best match because they've had some pretty bang average kickoff matches earlier last year when he was doing the hat and the dancing, absolute bobbins. Let's explore the dynamic that you've laid out there nicely. One of my favorite things in goddamn wrestling, and it shouldn't be hard. I mean, it is actually hard because what you're doing is asking for incredible execution of physically almost impossible things to pull off. But, you know, when that happens, it's great. I'm going to put it over. There's an aerial that Ricochet, I'm not the best with, like, move name guy. No. Can't do it. I'm not Excalibur. He does some kind of mad aerial to the outside, right? And he just hits it so clean. He looks like he's literally collided into Sheamus because it looks like it's an attack. And Sheamus trusts Ricochet far more than creative do because he barely even lifts up his arm. He's like, that guy's going to nail me because his timing is phenomenal. And all I have to do is just bump a bit, even though I'm going to get forced to the mat. That was beautiful. Like, if you put these two in an actual captivating program, you can add at least a star and a half to something like this because it would mean something. It would get the requisite reactions. I'll tell you another reason why this is great. Ricochet kind of annoyed me, like, during strict full original lockdown because he was out there, like, at Florida restaurants, just like, going, hey, look at me, I'm out. He's like, oh, good, because I'm not. I'm a bit, probably a little bit more, you know, not as reckless as you are. His patter tends to be lame, does Ricochet's, right? Here's a recent tweet of his. Are you ready for this?
Go on.
So apparently there must have been, he's either making this up or there was some kind of Twitter game or whatever. This is Ricochet. So your nickname is what most people call you by. So my nickname should be best match on the show, Ricochet. Does he not know what a nickname is? Does he not know how punchlines function? Do you not know how ridiculous that sounds? There are better ways of putting yourself over. Oh, you're right, best match on the show? Yeah, yeah. Oh, what are you doing later tonight? Best match on the show? Like, Rick is probably his nickname.
Yeah. Rick, here's how it works, right?
Trev.
Trev. You'd say, what are you doing after the show? Pooey Joe. That's how a nickname works. Right.
All right, best match on the show. What an idiot. Yeah. And yet, And yet, when he does these spectacular things, I'm thinking, oh, you're great. I'm going to get behind you. Especially when you've got a bruiser in the opposite corner.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed his, what, four-minute match I think he had with Drew McIntyre on SmackDown a month or so ago. Time has no meaning. It might have been like slightly longer than that. But I love that. And I'm worried slightly that Ricochet is developing into a modern-day Dolph Ziggler as a result of what we're talking about here. But I'll take that rather than...
You should be talking about in the present tense. That's a past tense, brother. At least Ziggler got a moment in the sun.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's better than, why not me being Brock Lesnar? Oh, that's why. I just remember that bloody promo from, is there a Saudi show he fought him on? I think it was, yeah. Because they went, oh, we can get away with this. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right, back to the long-term storytelling on SmackDown, Sage. Because Postman Pierce and Seville are talking about the Royal Rumble. But, I am sweltering. I'm sweating cubs. That's what they're saying. I'm sweating cubs on you. And they reveal that I think the thermostat's broken. So Postman Pierce goes, I'll tell you what, I'll go and get someone to go and fix it. And Sonya Deville's like, oh, I feel like I'm in desert. Oh, I can't handle this. I'll tell you what I'll do to cool myself down, Sige. I'll take my jacket off. Oh, that's better. I'll feel benefit when I get outside now. But see what she's done there? She's taken the jacket off. And that was the only thing stopping Naomi from caving her head in. So Naomi walks in and goes, oh, see you not wearing the jacket, so fight time. Thankfully, though, Postman Pierce races back in and goes, whoa, stop what you're doing. This distraction, I'm going to say it like it's a match now. This distraction allows Sonya Deville to put the jacket back on. And Postman Pierce, though, does say, yeah, you did kind of screw her over last week. So I'm going to book Naomi versus SmackDown Championship Contenders match next week.
It wasn't a literal thing that she said. As soon as I saw or heard thermostats, I know where this is going. So it's not a hook, is it? You're an idiot if you don't see where it's going. Like, Naomi is like a 6, 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid. They do this thing when they reach that age, when they start to learn like logic traps and like the way in which logic as a concept kind of works. And they love doing that back to you to prove that they understand it and try and get away with stuff. Hmm. Like James is doing that now. He's six years old.
He's like, Daddy, can I not have a fruit shoot? And you're not really listening. You're like, no. Oh, no, I can't have a fruit shoot. So I can. Oh.
Yep. And that's Naomi.
So next week, sorry to spoil this SmackDown preview. Next week, my pitch is, Naomi gets one of her mates to go into the office and be like, oh God, I'm just in my gear. That's the problem. I'm just absolutely freezing. You got a blanket or something, Sonya? I haven't got a blanket, but I tell you what, I'm fine. So I'll do the nice thing. I'll put my jacket around you. And then she's effectively the general manager and Naomi batters Sonya Deville. That's my pitch for next week.
Because it's no dumber than what they'll actually do.
The jacket of power. Ooh. Right. Something good did happen next. There was a fantastic joke told before a brief match between Madcap Moss and Kofi Kingston. So Kingston's reading a proclamation from King Woods, and who unfortunately suffered a calf injury and will miss the Royal Rumble, which is a genuine shame. Bloody love Xavier Woods. Hope he gets well soon and recovers quickly enough from that. But Woods also decreed that Kingston would enter the Rumble match to represent the kingdom. Out comes Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss. Happy Corbin's happy because he's rich, he's good looking, he's bought himself a new watch. And the only thing that's going to make him even happier is when he throws Kofi Kingston out of the Rumble. Talks about being happy when they injured Drew McIntyre. We get a recap of that. And then it's time for Madcap Moss to shine. And he says, what do you call the New Day when it's just Kofi who's crapping himself over how much he fears me? The Poo Day. Poo Day. I did like that line. Kofi.
Why?
Hmm?
Why?
Because it's got the word poo in it.
Yeah, an absolute animal.
Poo day. Imagine, like, because you, like, that's genuinely gone back and forth five times, hasn't it? In a script meeting, like, TV writers. Yeah, I used to work on Dexter and on Lost. And now I've had five different poo jokes be reviewed by Vince McMahon. Because I have a feeling he probably was involved in this. I don't know why. Just got a sense that.
No. You got a sixth sense, don't you?
He's probably going to be involved with the poo day and Kofi Kingston dropping a royal deuce on Moss's forehead. So he basically said he was going to, on his forehead in this match. We don't really use the word deuce. Do we use the word deuce?
He kind of did.
Yeah?
Deuce, drop a deuce.
We don't really use that in the UK, do we?
No, we've got actual good words.
Right. So like I said, by the way, new favourite gear. When I create my new character on the new 2K, whenever it comes out, I'm having Madcap Moss's gear. Shorts and suspenders, brilliant. No notes, fantastic. But I say this all the time, and it's probably because of the way he looks necessarily more so than his work per se, but he's going to be a megastar, isn't he, Madcap Moss? He's got all the right attributes to succeed in WWE, to give a really backhanded compliment.
Yeah, I said something similar in a recent list, which you can read on whatculture.com/WWE now and Title 10 Wild Outside Bets to win the 2022 Royal Rumble match. Spoiler, Madcap Moss features on it for that exact reason, Wilborn. Hulking physique, great athlete, has terrible comedy stylings, which are meant to be like, that's meant to get heat. So he's a stupid comedy character. He's also ripped, and you know, he's not an ugly bloke at all, quite telegenic. The only thing he's missing is a big pair of silicone tits for Vince McMahon's particular sensibilities.
So early on, Moss picks up Kofi. He's going to chuck him over the top rope for Happy Corbin to show that he can eliminate him ahead of the Royal Rumble. But Kofi reverses it, and Moss gets chucked to the outside, and then Kofi dives onto both Corbin and Moss to take us to an ad break. When we come back, Moss is in control, hits a fall-away slam on Kingston, but Kingston fights back, clotheslines, drop kick, kicks him in the chest, hits him with the boom drop, sets up for trouble in paradise, but of course, Corbin on the outside causes a distraction. Moss manages to avoid trouble in paradise, takes over. Kingston goes for a flying crossbody. Moss catches him. Kingston tries to hit the SOS, but Moss counters into the punchline. He gets the victory. I mean, he's rolling into the Rumble, I suppose, in your predictions.
It's odd, like, just odd. If you watch this match and you didn't keep up with WWE and you watched it every now and then, it was a thing that you just quite liked. You'd have any idea that Kofi Kingston's a former WWE champion. Mm-hmm. That these things, like, not, they don't matter anything to them. It's just week to week, month to month. Like, they're preserving the idea of, I put it this way, I don't think Chris Jericho or Kenny Omega or John Moxley is ever going to lose in 5 minutes to a comedy character in an unannounced match in AEW. Like, they care about these sort of things, and you in turn care about both those performers, title lineages. It's all this holistic thing. It's impossible in WWE. As for the quality of the match, I don't know. Like, Madcap Moss's, like, timings, he's a little bit over exuberant. Maybe that's part of the gimmick, because he is mad. But it just comes across as quite a messy experience. I don't know, but I wouldn't be pinning Kofi Kingston in 5 minutes if I was them.
No, exactly. Surprising that. And speaking of odds, let's talk about this main event segment. Face-to-face, Seth freaking Rollins and Roman Reigns. Oh, my God. I was watching this late last night, Sid, and I can't tell you how much time I saved during these entrances. So if anything happened and I've missed it, apologies, but I saved about 10 minutes watching this. So they both come out, take bloody ages to come out there. I will note that as Roman Reigns was making his entrance, Pat McAfee talked about the fact he's been champion for 502 days and he's going to break Brock Lesnar's record, Cole said, when he reaches 504, which is, probably already happened, actually. But the fans bloody love Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns chant, and they appreciated when he told Omaha to acknowledge him. Rollins, though, I mentioned there was a nice video package of the WrestleMania cash-in, which is always great to see. Anyway, Rollins says to Reigns, let's roll back the years and do the old Shield fist. And Reigns just looks at him and sneers and says, That's beneath me now. And Rollins gets under his skin by talking about their track records when they faced each other. Rollins has beaten Reigns at every time that they fought. But Reigns says, yeah, that was in the past. I'm in God mode now. I'm the greatest of all time. But Rollins says, you know what? Fair play. Look at what you've done. Look at all your accomplishments. But let's not forget, is that a real title win? You didn't win the title on your own, did you? I mean, the first time you won titles, you needed the Shield, you know, and now you need the Usos, the Bloodline. And he says, that's the difference between you and me. Without Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, he was just fine. He climbed the ladder to success. In fact, he was climbing that ladder whilst Roman Reigns was riding the pine in the CFL. He talked about holding Roman Reigns' hand to get him through stuff whilst they were in the Shield. And again, he now needs the Bloodline to hold everything up. And Reigns just says, waste of my time. He says, you dress like a clown. You sound like a clown. You are a clown. And, you know, if I really wanted a big time match, I wouldn't have picked you from Monday Night Raw. If I wanted to face a megastar, I'd have probably picked your wife. In amongst all this, the Usos try to jump Rollins, jumps out to the ring, jumps onto the announce table, and then leaps over another tack of theirs, gets back in the ring, stares down Roman Reigns, and then he scarpers out to the ramp, tapping his forehead, saying, you thought you're going to outsmart me? I've got you this time. It was a surreal end to the show, this.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely crap, to be perfectly honest. You do these verbal shooty segments typically when you haven't created a story around the two people involved. It's usually like a meeting of two people who are good on the mic or are stars of their respective generations or whatever. We saw it with them, Cena and Reigns in the summer. We saw it with, we're seeing it right now with Punk and MJF. That's slowly becoming its own storyline. It's making sense for the context of that company. But because they'd never done anything in that company, there's no real story of which to speak. They decided to insult each other from across the ring for about a good 10, 15 minutes, like getting each other's heads or whatever. Why are they doing this format when they've actually got a history between the two guys? It's just odd. When they're talking about how, you were in the Canadian Football League when I was coming up. Like, that's not a diss. If anything, Roman Reigns has succeeded at a quicker rate than you and at a more like calculable scale. Like, you've done more in less time. That makes you better than the guy who took ages to not be as good as you. Like, that's a weird self-own. The Becky Lynch line, I guess, was good. Like, Roman's presence is so great. Like, I'm in God mode now, son. Like, I really enjoyed that. That was good. I love his delivery. I just love his presence, his disposition, everything about him. But this is so weird. It felt like they were meeting each other for the first time, and yet they were talking about their shared history. Just a really odd, stilted thing. They looked like they talked about this history they shared together. They didn't really feel like they were two equals who had come together once upon a time, but had now gone their separate ways and were equal stature single stars, because Roman Reigns looked like a serious deal. Seth Rollins did, in fact, look like an idiot. Looks like he's got all the gear, but has no idea. And then the end bit with the Usos, when they came to attack Rollins, and Rollins outwitted them and outmaneuvered them physically. Were you meant to sympathize? Were you meant to be happy that he escaped? Because they're two heels here. Like, it just feels like, I understand that Roman got the Rona, right? But the last time a massive AEW main event was bodged because of it, we got Eddie Kingston versus John Moxley. And that's a ridiculous standard to set for backs against the wall creativity, but it's a standard that has been set. This was drivel in a weird way that I can barely articulate.
Yeah, I get the point they're making. Oh, Seth Rollins has outsmarted Roman Reigns and the Bloodline here. Will he do that in a few weeks at the Royal Rumble? But it felt to me like they went, okay, so Royal Rumble's end of January, right? On the go-home SmackDown, we'll do a contract signing, okay? And the week before that, we'll do a thing where maybe the Usos and Roman Reigns or Roman Reigns attack Seth Rollins and leave him laying to close the show. And then they went, oh, crap, we've got another week on the docket here. Have him just outsmart him and walk out of the arena, and that's the end. It was just such a weird, flat ending to the show, I thought.
Yeah, it's odd as well. And the thing is when you do these sort of shoot season like promo exchanges, you come across like an idiot, or the whole segment comes across as unconvincing when you've got something in the chamber, but because of the story you're trying to tell, I guess, you can't even use it. Seth Rollins, when he had his big run as champion in the storylines, was helped by Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Randy Orton, and Kane. In fact, that was the entire premise of the feud, was Seth Rollins sneaked away with a win. He was chosen as the face of the authority. He consistently failed to get it done on his own, which was tiresome in the minds of Triple H and Stephanie. Triple H eventually turned on him, said, "We should never have thought of you as the pet project of WWE." And then Seth Rollins turned babyface and beat Triple H. And was like, "Oh, you should have, because I've just beaten you." I'm not saying it was the best storyline in the world. In fact, it's odd that it has no cultural legacy, given they spent 2 years doing it. But at the same time, Roman Reigns could have went, "Well, hang on.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a really great babyface run where you've not relied on like help?" No. They should have, didn't mention expressly that Seth Rollins beat Brock Lesnar all by himself at SummerSlam 2019?
I don't think so.
They should have.
Mm. Just it felt like there wasn't a main event, basically, on this week's show. It felt main event worthy to have the two of them in the ring. But in terms of a closing end to the show, yeah, just surreal that they were like... Yeah,
one guy felt like they belonged in the main event.
Mm.
The other guy, I'm sorry, did not.
Yeah, fair. Right, well, let us know your thoughts on Friday Night SmackDown on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at...
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from. The Daily Wrestling Podcast, got the Rampage review to come and the Monday Night Raw preview later on today as well. But for now, this has been the SmackDown review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.